straight people. It's like a racist would hate a certain type. I did not trust straight people.
Mm-hmm.
I just did not trust them. Like, my eyes would narrow to slits when I was confined to a building. I was quite suspicious. It was weird. I mean, I was one sick person anyway, but I was very distrustful of anybody who looked straight. And here I was in this church where everybody had looked straight, and I felt that it was in the best interest of the organization if I looked straight myself, which was very difficult. Because he was bald.
Weird.
That was strange. Because everybody was really religious, it seemed like to me. And
religious because they their manner and so forth?
I don't know. They just look like they look like these sedate, church-going people, you know. And it was a strange mix to have these sedate-looking people following this this man who's preaching these revolutionary, talking about the dialectic, who's preaching the dialectic and stuff. It's just strange, you know. It took a while to get adjusted, like 10 years.
Yeah, right.
Okay. I don't know what else to say. I'll tell you, I refused to go to school. I refused to participate in...
You would get dropped out of the whole...
I was trying to drop out, and I couldn't drop out legally, and I couldn't drop out because I realized that there's no way I could drop out. I couldn't remove myself because I was always going to be affected by, you know, something I was going to come down on. I mean...
Did you continue taking drugs after you started going to Peking Temple?
No, I stopped immediately taking drugs. I mean, immediately.
Why?
Because I knew that it was not acceptable, and I knew that if you believe, if you really believed in things you said, and like I said, I was strongly believed in Vietnam. I mean, you know, my position about Vietnam. Like, if I said I believed, I should be willing to make put an image that was acceptable to people to show, you know, what I should look away that's acceptable to people, so that my beliefs would be more acceptable,
mm-hmm.
as well as the fact that I knew that it could cause people to get arrested. It was, you know, it was, I don't know that I came to this realization myself, but it was pointed out, you know, that it would be very unfair to, you know, expose people to the risk of being arrested for drugs, you know. But that one thing that really alienated my family. I had a very bad time with my family for years. Just finally got it straightened out. Then I go to Guyana. And all this bad press, now they're freaking out again.
Well, it's been a long time. You have this situation with your parents straighten out, you say, or something?
I did for a while. Because I totally cut off them. I totally cut off. I could not deal with my parents.
Yeah.
I just could not handle dealing with my family. And it took me several years before I was able to not be affected by them, where I could just sit down and not get emotional, just bullshit. Just say bullshit they want to hear and not feel bad that I was lying, not lying, but, you know, being false just to please them and not get upset behind all that. And it took me years before I could do that.
What do you do in Guyana?
Oh dear. Can I lie?
No.
Tom's in the room.
Well, that's okay. He won't say anything.
Well, I'm training to be a teacher's aide.
You're training so that you'll become a teacher's aide eventually.
Yes. Three of us adults are working with a group of 6 and 7 year old children in the Jonestown Community School, elementary school.
Mm-hmm. And it's a full time job.
Yes. We're learning.
Okay. All right. Well, you're not. You haven't taken drugs for, I don't know how many
10 years.
10 years. And did you ever have any feeling that you wanted to go back into the drug culture or whatever?
Never.
You wanted to leave this type of structured, fairly structured?
No.
Okay.
But in the same token, I don't like structure just for the sake of structure. I mean, I wouldn't replace this structure with just another structure because I'm resistant to structure, but I will... You know, I will become a part of structure if I believe
you know, and believe in it.
You're generally resistant to that kind of thing. But, okay, how does it feel to be a communist? I mean, you're a communist, right?
Well,
you're
one
of those communists.
Well, see, wait a minute. The thing I hate to say is my mom had this book called The True Believer. And everything you say about being committed they say it's because you're a, you know, it's a person who has no self-image, so they have to identify totally with a cause, or a person who feels their life is wasted, so they have to give it to, you know. So, I mean, I'm afraid anything I say would be, you know, I don't want to make it sound like this, you know, it's the truth, right? And, you know, I mean, I don't want to, you know, come across like that.
What do you think is wrong with
there's
the,
nothing
Eric Hoffer's analysis in The True Believer, you know, about what he says about personality and so forth? You know, that's a pretty devastating argument.
I believe that naturally people who have been most hurt by society are more likely going to want to change it and become a part of something that will bring this change about. And I think we can't say just because the weak personality or it naturally people are hurt the most by something they're going to want to change it the most. It was, a lot of it was I wanted to escape the situation I was in. I mean, that may not be the right thing to say. It may be a negative thing to say. I realized this because I did not want to deal with people in my former life. And I remember Jim speaking to me, you're not joining this organization to escape your people you knew. You have to deal with them. Like, people would come to church, they said, I didn't want to, I said, you talk to them, I don't want to talk to them, you know. And you're not coming here to escape, you know, you're coming here to, you know, face things, deal with things. But, so I have. Yes, I remember one thing. When I was in junior high, I had written these, I was always better in, like, reading and writing. And, I've written this story about this, this little boy who's dad had died, and I mean, just an example of how morbid I was. You know, I was obsessed with death. Karen even commented when she knew me, I was so obsessed with death. I was always talking about death. This little boy who had whose dad had died, and the mother was in mourning, and it distressed him to see his mother in mourning, and he tried to piece things together. Just, well, his aunt said his dad was happy in heaven, so he's logically saying that if this was the case, then his mother would be happy if she went to heaven with him. So he waited till his mother was asleep. He went in the house and doused the bed with something and lit it and shut the door and burnt his mother up. And everybody was so they were outraged. My dad said, I'm putting a lock on my door. I mean, he was joking. But I was so depressed that, you know, I remember slitting my wrist before because I think it was more of a dramatic ploy than it was. It wasn't a suicide attempt. It was just for the, I don't know. I mean, I had this hostility that I could not direct. And it was just, I'd go into rages, and I mean, there's nothing I could trust. You know, my dad made me go to the psychiatrist. I couldn't tell him shit. Things I did say, I said something like, I said, well, you know, sometimes people outgrow people. They said, oh, wow, that this psychologist worked out. Like, I thought I had outgrown someone. I said, well, I mean, you outgrow your need for someone. I mean, I didn't feel like I could express myself to anybody. They'd understand what I was talking about. You know, what am I saying? Like, I wanted something to end. Like, I'd walk in the street, you know, without looking at those cars, and, you know, I mean, I just didn't give a shit, you know, or just hitchhike as, you know, as a young person all over the place, which was, you know, dangerous. Just do, you know, reckless things because, you know, and well, I thought, well, any big government at the time, any big government, I wouldn't trust. But then I thought, well, I believe in communes, and the word communism has the words. I mean, at that time, it's hard to say because, like, I was 16 when I joined the church, so I wasn't that sophisticated. I wasn't that. I mean, I couldn't say that I had this. You know, maybe if I joined when I was 26, it would have been better. I mean, I have a better story to tell. You know, but. To me, I didn't reject the idea of communism, and then it was presented to me, but it wasn't presented in a lot of political words. It was communism was presented more of a religious context. Gradually, I learned more of the straight, you know, without the religious garb on it. But it was very acceptable to me, and I saw it as, I mean, I'm not... I don't want to sound like all these truisms. Or I mean, I don't like talking about...
Well, what do you like to talk
about? Well, I mean, to me, communism was the only alternative, you know. If there is any alternatives, I mean, I viewed, before coming to the organization, that I thought there was going to be nuclear war. I just thought it was inevitable. Mm-hmm. And if... And I don't know, you know... me that used to depress me. It doesn't depress me now. I just don't give a shit now. But as a child, a young person, it bothered me. But I feel I understand my hostility. I understand. I did not knowing any political, not knowing any theory, or I didn't understand, and I didn't see any solution. I understand a system that puts its thumb on little people. Why I'm hostile, and now I know what I should be hostile to. I could direct my hostility. And, I mean...
Can you talk about your hostility? I mean, you know when Jim talks, he has a tremendous amount of hostility, but he's able to... articulated, he can direct it and challenge it, the whole system, the whole structure, you know, capitalism, and then going through all kinds of things. I mean, he just is able to, you know, I mean, I can't think of anybody who's more capable of directing hostility and articulating it, and mm-hmm. giving a lot of people who are in the People's Temple, who have tremendous hostility,
mm-hmm.
because they've been so messed over by the system. He can give people a way to channel it and direct it, and he's done that for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
So, how do you know, I mean, I don't know, I kind of look for some way you might want to reflect upon your experience in the United States. And you're here in Guyana, and you're in a different situation, and how you look at it, and, you know, where your life has gone, and I don't know. I'm not looking for truisms so much
I don't mind truisms. I mean, I don't mind saying truisms. It's just that how they're interpreted. But I guess you just can't worry about how people, because nobody...
No, we can't worry about.
But, I mean...
You're not going to convert anybody to what you believe.
I feel that, like in Guyana, there's a lot of pressure, influence, and... We're removed from a lot of the pressures, influences, and a lot of the pain of the society, where you're even more able to view how decadent the society was.
Mm-hmm.
When you know, when you can walk down the street and just walk down the street and not, you know, like in the States, you know, there was always muggings, or, you know, I mean, if you were. Or, you know, somebody, I mean, you see people get stabbed. Like, we used to go to every major city. And to see some two men get in an argument and one man just stabbing another person. And
trying to help and people not being able to get people to help, you know. And just
what do you think is basically wrong with the United States?
The total alienation caused by the government, a government that is totally based on profit. The total alienation of the individual, total crushing of, you know, the sensitivity of humans, the total insensitivity to humans. I'm not very good at,
You're doing fine.
The total insensitivity, like just, it's always been depressing to me to be in a big city because it's more, it's more blaring and blatant. People rushing over each other, New York especially. I always get extremely depressed in New York to see people, they've had to become extremely hostile just to function. I mean, you'll notice like people are hostile in cities, but especially like in New York, they'll just be nasty, make nasty comments all the time and just walk over somebody who's laying in the gutter. Or, I mean, to live in that, I just couldn't do it. I could have never done it except that I knew in the organization I had to be, you know, strong to, I mean, sensitize. It was more painful, but yet you knew you had a commitment to try to change it, so you had to endure the pain of it more. Like, without a commitment to something, I would have just been crushed.
How do you feel about this, about changing it? I mean, do you think the United States has is there any hope for the United States?
I do not see any hope, because I think the American public, the American people are so apathetic. They're so,
are they different than other people? I mean, are they different than Russian people or Chinese people or African people? Or is it, what is it about American society that
the affluence that's held before them? They think that somehow they'll get a piece of, maybe they'll get a little something, and they think they're part of the affluence. They think they, I mean,
being led along, so forth.
Yeah, just as long as they don't get personally affected too much, they don't care what happens to anybody else. What kind of exploitation of other people? As long as they're not personally affected.
So you don't think there's really any hope for the American society unless there's some total change, or the place would just be blown up.
I think that the only hope is for somebody to bomb the fuck out of it with an atomic bomb, because, and then maybe.
That's a good way to direct your hostility.
Because, I hate to be someone to advocate such suffering on people, because I know atomic warfare is.
Do you think it's the only thing that'll bring people to their senses if it doesn't kill them?
I think there are things could bring people to their senses, but I don't think people are going to be brought to their senses. I don't think these conditions are going to exist, you know. I think there's parallels to Hitler's Germany, you know, where the more depression in the economy, the more racism develops, and the more certain groups become scapegoats, and it takes that direction. I don't see the people that have any social consciousness, they're not willing to take that many risks, or, from what I've seen, are just as bourgeois as...
So it's pretty much a hopeless situation.
I say it's very hopeless.
Do you see any hope as you look around the world?
Yes, I do. I see, I see in Africa people becoming liberated from colonization and developing socialist, communist economies. I see.
Do you think socialism and communism have a chance to become victorious over capitalism?
Well, I'd say that
without a thoroughly devastating nuclear war.
I think that we're headed towards nuclear war at this point, according to the news I've heard, with the kind of posture that Carter's taking. Got a confrontation for us with the USSR, and I feel that all the resources are with Third World, which are turning more and more becoming communist.
has being in people's temples given you more, is it giving you, obviously, has more of a perspective on the world? I mean, you know, some people live in a world that's as big as their house. Other people live in a world that might be as big as their community, perhaps, or the next door neighbor or something, this block.
I'd say that before it became a part of the organization, I was so caught up in my own morass that it was not possible for me to get too much. I was too strung out, whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. with my own personal life. It was just too painful to deal with, let alone try to comprehend, you know, the total world picture where I don't have the personal, the pain, you know, as far as, you know, the worst pain is just, it's not personal so much. It's just, so, I mean, if you don't have the personal pain, you're able to become more aware of the world situation and whatever.
And you've been able to do that, then. You feel you've got an international outlook through the people's temple.
Yes, and since I've been here more and more because, you know, we had chances to get a better education, you know.
Mm-hmm.
More of a chance to have time to read or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you think there's anything to the fact that being in Guyana, you're not living in the United States, you're really not living in the world, so to speak.
That I'm not living in the world?
That you are, much more so than being kind of stuck in the United States. You know, like, you're living, what is Guyana anyway? It's a third world nation, and, you know, you're part of a developing world.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be concerned about the international picture because you're affected by it much more so than you would be if you had to buy a hot dog and hamburger and pay your telephone bill. Or, you know. After he was arrested?
No, this is before. There had been murders that had taken place, according to the book I read about Charles Manson, written by the prosecuting attorney.
Yeah.
That his girls, whatever you call them,
family.
Yeah, family. The family. At the time my dad was going to trial, they were going to trial for something as well, and we.
Where in Ukiah?
Yes. Yeah. And my family had always offered their home, our home, to hippies at the time, and it wasn't such a popular thing. It wasn't as common, at least in that part of the country area. Hippies, hitchhikers, we always let them stay at our house or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so we invited them to stay at our house. And they were very, very strange. Very in-group, they called themselves a family, they had all this humor that only they understood, and very significant, they had significant things that were very significant to them that other people didn't quite understand, you know.
Yeah.
It's a very strange.
This was before they were living in that ranch in the desert? Or?
They were living on a bus.
Oh, I see.
And they were traveling around. Charles was down. No, because they weren't living in the actor's home. Because one of my brother's girlfriend, after my dad got arrested and being joined with him, in fact, her name is Ruth Morehouse. She was involved in the, she was not directly involved in the murder. She did not go to the tape,
mm-hmm.
or Bianca, whatever you call it, murder. I don't know what else. It's possible she's involved in other things.
Yeah.
But she was involved in poisoning one of the people who turned state's evidence. But she lived with us for a year before she went there. It just,
mm-hmm.
to me, it struck me as very strange. People who, like hippie, is the word hippie?
It's all right.
Anyway, hippies, so-called. I thought all hippies were good.
Mm-hmm.
Like a dummy.
And evil hippies.
And I didn't know. I mean, they believe in peace and all this stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And
after joining the temple, I was very shocked. I saw her in Life magazine, and I don't know what to really say about that. It was just how easy it could have been to get involved in something like that.
So you think that you could have gotten sucked into it?
I don't know if I could have. But, I mean, I don't want to say that, like I said, egotist, because I did not get along with him. Mm-hmm. In fact, my sister did, because she's more passive.
Get along with who?
The Manson girls. I mean, I was friendly to him, but I wasn't really close to him. Like, my sister got really close to him,
mm-hmm.
but she's only 13. But
they used dope when they were
there. Oh, yeah. In fact, I used to make necklaces all the time and give them away, and I gave them each a necklace. And when they came back again, they came through the Mendocino County, they gave me a grippy bag of marijuana. But, I don't know what I could say about that. It seems, you know,
came off like they were loving.
Yeah, very, you know, close-knit family, and very, you know, like they give each other gifts, they'd make stuff for, like, my sister, or make my mother some article clothing, like they were just giving people or something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember when, I mean, you probably want to say, if I had been in the States, at the I left right before the first July New West article. I would have been, I know how furious I get. I know how when I thought it was an ingest that my dad was being arrested, used to cops would go by and say, fucker, like this. I hated cops. I know that would have been very difficult for me to control. Like when the reporters were harassing us, it would have been very difficult for me not to go out and cuss them out.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, just...
Yeah, it was difficult for a lot of them.
I'd have a very hard time. It would have been, I mean, I'm sure it was difficult for a lot of people, but...
Mm-hmm.
I was so incensed.
That'd be what, the injustice of it?
That, I mean, it was obviously a conspiracy. I mean, you know, we know all the facts of conspiracy. I mean, I knew from what I had heard about Khan, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot behind it. And I know that this Americans love sensationalism, and they just want to hear this shit because their lives are so jaded. Nothing affects them but, you know, the grossest of, you know.
Good. Very, very well.
But I was infuriated. I was hearing Guyana, but I was infuriated. And I never did respect the press very much anyway,
mm-hmm.
even from my own little experiences with the Ukiah Journal when I was being arrested. But it's like there's nothing. It's like a big monster that you can't combat it because the press is all controlled.
It's like it's got its own mentality.
Yeah, and there's no way you can present, state your case, because everything you say is, you know, distorted, taken out of context, manipulated. I see no even reason trying to. Maybe there is a reason to try to present your story, but I don't see.
They only hear what they want to hear.
Yeah. If I had been able to do what I wanted to, I would have loved to take a machine gun and just shot up.
Anything else you might have?
12 years.
What was it like living in, did you live in a kind of neighborhood?
Okay. Well, I was living in a real rowdy, kind of like a, it was a ghetto, but it wasn't one of those bad ones. It was real rowdy, and it had a freeway on it, and at night all you hear is trucks and cars and stuff, you know. And it had a busy street in between, and the schools were far, and there was a lot of fights and wrecks on the corners and stuff.
What kind of things do you remember in particular that happened to you? What was your life like?
And one of them is
like I wrote on paper when I was about 8 or 9. Okay, see, me and my brother was playing ball in our backyard, and the ball went over other people's fence. And so we had asked them for it, and they would give it to us. So we said we was going to tell our mom, and they went and told their big sister. And then, after about 2 minutes later, about later on in the day, it was a wreck. It was a car wreck on the corner. And so, you know how everybody calls around when the siren comes. And so somebody called the police, and it was a long time coming. And there was two. And so my mom and went across the street, you know, asked my auntie what had happened. So their sister had came home, so they told her, and they pointed my mom out to her. So she went across the street over my auntie's yard, and they just started fighting. So I was just standing on there watching. And so my auntie had, she was sitting on a gun, because she knew it was going to happen. And so, you know, she had handed it to my mom, and then she took it away because the cops were coming. She took it away, and she stepped down. Okay, the cops didn't even know what was happening. They didn't even ask. So when they stopped fighting, she came over there where I was, and I was standing there. She pushed me down and started kicking me all up in my sides and stuff.
Who was doing this?
Our next door neighbor's sister. She was kicking me all up in my sides. And so